Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you one and all for being here, wherever here is for you and whenever here is for you. I'm in Massachusetts in the United States, and it's dark. It's 9 p.m. and a beautiful starlit night, but you could be anywhere, and that's really cool. My guest tonight, speaking of really cool, is Catherine Samuelson, who has a fascinating background that she will tell you about, but is just really smart and a lot of fun to talk to. And she came up with a topic and said, this would be fun to talk about on the radio. I said, yes, it would. So you will get to listen to us kick things around and enjoy each other's company. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And I was trying to figure out what to talk about this evening. And a lot of what's going on in my country, in the United States, is pretty strange. There are some very dark, crazy things going on, and it's hard to just focus on holding the light and expecting the best outcome. But as much as people who function from a place of metaphysics and taking responsibility for our thoughts creating our reality, we sometimes forget that everybody else is doing that too. And that not everybody is doing what's best for you or for everybody else. They're doing what they think is good for them or what's good for the people that pay them. And so there is, as much as there are people in the light that are focusing on changing the world in a very positive way, there are people who are in profound darkness that are doing things which at the very least are stupid. And at the worst are seriously dangerous. And we don't, you know, think about people doing a ritual at an altar in a big circle and all of that kind of stuff. Although I wouldn't be surprised if there are places in the world where that's going on. But getting together in a boardroom or getting together in some other meeting and saying, hey, this would work for us. You know, some people will get hurt, but we're not going to worry about that because either we're going to save money or we're going to make money or it's going to make somebody who has a lot of money happy and then they'll give us money. And so they do something that's really bad for a lot of people. What came to light, it's been going on for months, is that the governor of a state decided he would hire a private contractor to manage the water supply of a city, and they managed to fill that water with lead from a nearby river that they decided was a perfectly fine water source, even though it wasn't, and they've poisoned the entire city because it was convenient and cheap. And that's dark. That's evil. That's crazy. And that kind of stuff is going on around us all the time. There is a phrase, a perspective, admonition that comes up all over the world in healing and metaphysics. And it's do no harm. We think of it as the Hippocratic Oath, and Hippocrates was talking about it thousands of years ago, but it goes back even further than that. All of the mystery school traditions, some of which go back 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years, had as their basic premise, do no harm. That seems to have been lost to some people. And I, for the work that I do and the things that I see, and also because I come from Brooklyn, I have added to it, do no harm, but take no. You can figure out what the next word is. We live in interesting times, which is supposedly a Chinese curse. And there are a lot of difficulties around, and you can't assume that because you live your life by doing no harm and taking care of others, that other people are doing that as well. And so some of the energy, some of the prayers, some of the manifestations have to be about protecting ourselves and all the everything we love and everyone we love from these people that are not operating from the place of do no harm, who are doing a lot of damage. Someone said you can pray for people or you can pray on people, but you can't do both. So it's all going to turn out all right, but at the moment it's weird. Which probably is what should be on my tombstone. So that's tonight's metaphysical musing, and it'll be much more fun to talk to my guest, Catherine Samuelson. Hey, Catherine.
Hey. Your metaphysical musing made me suddenly think of Bob Dylan and his Christian period, his song about you can only serve one master. Do you remember that song?
Yeah. These are not, one of the things you realize pretty quickly is there are no really new thoughts, and certainly what I'm talking about is not new. But
maybe new ways to express them.
New ways to express them and moments when they need to be said. So, but we're going to have a lot of fun. So I love having Catherine on the show because she's wicked smart. She's funny. And we have a great time talking to each other. So
yes,
we've done this a few times.
and I'd say you're wicked smart and funny, too. So,
well, there you go. So it works
both
ways.
And I think there's some past lives hanging around that are echoing or something.
Could be. And you also have a fascinating background. And the first time you were on the show, you did your whole story. But give people the elevator
speech. Abbreviated version?
Huh?
The abbreviated version?
The abbreviated version, because you have a combination of background and skills. It's pretty unusual.
Grew up in Central Illinois, went to law school, practiced law for about 27 years, moved from Central Illinois to the Chicago area and then to Massachusetts, gave up law, became a certified life coach, and started doing channeled angel readings. And now live in Vermont. How's that for the abbreviated version?
That's a great abbreviated version. And I love the fact that you're a lawyer with extensive background and you do angel readings. I was just life is good.
But in some ways, it's an asset to doing the channeled angel messages, readings, whatever you want to call it, and the life coaching, because at heart, lawyers should be problem solvers.
Right.
And question askers. So,
and,
you know, so that it really, really helps.
And would that all lawyers were like that, but I'm sure you have run across at least a few that were not.
they shall remain nameless.
Yeah, I figured.
When I worked for the lovely county of Cook in the Department of, for those who are overseas, that is the county that Chicago is in, and Cook County is a small little local government of, at that time, 20,000 employees. And the department I worked in, which was federally grant-funded, you mentioned this one lawyer's name, and even the planners would go, oh, and roll their eyes.
They're everywhere. You know, there are those people. So you had this thought about something to kick around tonight, and I thought it was just great. So why don't you tell all of us what your thought was?
Well, I was watching another program on Einstein. You can go to pbs.org, and when I checked earlier today, they still have it available to watch. It's called The Mind of Einstein. And talking about relative, you know, special and general theories of relativity and that leading to quantum physics, but nobody can figuring out because there's what I don't know what you call it, you know, I call it Newtonian physics, sort of like the macro, the solid, the seemingly real, even though quantum physics says we're mostly empty space, and how there's rules in the quantum world that work just gangbusters in the quantum world, and there's different rules that work gangbusters in the Newtonian world, but they don't work in the Newtonian doesn't work in the quantum, and the quantum doesn't work in the Newtonian, and it's like, okay, it's not either or, it's both.
Right.
But you don't always know why or how it's both.
And that's pretty much true of everything, but certainly true in this stuff. And needless to say, these are things that I've kicked around and thought about a lot. You know, the thing, there are several basic understandings that, at least in this country, most people seem to graduate high school without ever hearing. And that's because physics is considered a science that requires math. And so the kids who are not good at math are not offered physics. And that means that the concepts within physics, which you don't need math, you don't have to do the proofs to understand what's being said. It's like saying it's got to be taught in French. Mathematics is a language. So they don't hear a lot of this stuff. And especially 100 years ago, this is, talk about established science. Einstein came up with some things 100 years ago, and there are people that have never heard it. And one of those is basically that everything is energy, and some of that energy is particles. He didn't know that the particles were also energy at the time, so he said some things are energy and some things are particles.
But he was was also the person who figured out that gravity is like bending in space.
Right. Right. And there's all kinds of things.
And space-time, you know, depending on how fast you're going, time may be slower or faster.
Right. But just this mind-bending idea that a light beam is electromagnetic waves of a certain frequency and at the same time as particles. And depending on which you look for, it's either one or the other, and it's obviously both, but you can't find both. Actually, somebody finally took a picture of it being both. So they're starting to do that.
Which goes back to the topic. Sometimes it's both.
Right. And then, you know, I love the stuff that dribbles out when new things in physics happen, like the Higgs boson. Everybody is very excited about this new particle that they call the God particle. And it's going to explain why particles have mass.
Except it didn't, did it?
Well, there are two things in there. First of all, it's not the actual Higgs boson particle. It's the the energetic field around it.
The signature, so to speak.
Right. That will create the understanding. So here we are again. It's not really solid particles at all. But the thing I love is, as soon as they said that, I scratched my head and said, so you have no idea why mass exists. You have no explanation for mass. Which means you have no explanation for physical objects and particles, and you have no explanation for gravity, all of which require mass. We can predict things, and we can use the fact that things work in consistent ways. So you can use Newtonian physics to get somebody on the moon.
Right.
You can plot all that stuff out. It's great for that.
And yet they're still trying to figure out how there's this whole thing about twinned electrons. Mm-hmm. Might not actually be anywhere close to each other, but they can track them somehow. And when something happens to one of them, it happens to the other one.
In the opposite direction, yeah. It's called an entanglement. And, you know, what does that say about consciousness and people and all kinds of other things where there's clearly some connection and clearly some effect that's happening, except an entanglement, it's not a cause. One does one thing and the other one does the same thing. and it happens faster than the speed of light, which I love.
Right.
It, nothing can happen faster than light except all of this stuff.
And they're trying to figure out how they can use it for communication and all sorts of interesting things.
And of course, you know, in the shamanic reality, in which everything is understood as being energy and thought, and that's what we're working with, and somehow it affects physical reality when you work in the non-physical reality, and all of it happens instantaneously. I just listen to this stuff and go, uh-huh, yeah.
Well, you know, and then there are those of us who are not pantheists, but panentheists, which my definition is you believe that the creator exists in everything, which is the pantheism. But the panentheism part is that everything also simultaneously exists in the creator.
So it's yes.
Massive oneness that people talk about. And Barbara Brown Taylor has a phrase, I think it's the luminous web that holds everything together. Isn't that a great phrase?
It's a wonderful phrase, and we're constantly trying to come up with language, usually very flowery and colorful language, to describe things that are hard to understand if you don't have the experience. And that's the difference between shamanic work or spirituality or however you want to talk about that. At its core, it's about having a personal experience of something and getting that understanding because of the experience, not because of intellect. And most of the rest of Western culture is about intellect and science explaining in its own version of things, mostly with mathematical formulas, how something works. But often using the knowledge of ancient cultures, using the knowledge gained in the moment with experiences, you look at things and go, well, yeah, it works like that. I don't know about all your numbers, but of course it happens instantaneously, faster than the speed of light.
And of course, and at some level, sometimes they say, I know it, but I don't need to know why or how, you know.
Well, and that's true of most people who do practical work. You know how it works, you know how to make it work. But you may not be able to come up with an explanation that's satisfactory to people who need some form of science to wrap their minds around it.
I explained it to somebody. It was the handyman I hired when I first moved into this condo, and he found out I did the psychic work, and I said, it's all quantum physics.
Right.
It's all energy.
Right.
For some reason, I've been tapped to be able to tap into that great luminous web, and it goes whoosh, and it comes out of my mouth, and they're like, really? How did you know that?
Well, and, you know, the World Wide Web makes it easier to talk about this stuff if you realize that it's a very slow, kludgy analog for how information is stored in the universe, which, you know, some people call the Akashic Record, and there are other ways that people talk about it. But it's a system in which no matter where you plug into it, all the information is there, and it's designed in such a way that it can't collapse. If one piece of it gets broken, all the other stuff is still there and all the information is still intact.
And there may be another way to access it.
Right.
But I also think that, you know, we can look at day-to-day life and say, it's not always either or. Sometimes it's both. I mean, we look outside, the sun is shining. Well, it's daytime here, but it's nighttime somewhere else. And one of the things as a life coach and an intuitive is having people see possibilities. It's, you know, yes, you want to have this other career, but that doesn't mean you have to give up the job that's providing you the money to pay your bills. You can go start building this career. It doesn't have to be either or.
Right.
For a while, it can be both. It might take some work. It might take some adjustment. But it doesn't have to be either you're stuck in this job that you hate forever, so you never get to go do the thing you think you love, you know, or quit the job that you hate and have no money to support yourself.
Right.
But I just got a, I don't know if we have time before break, but there's a book called Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. And on the back, I just got it a couple days ago from the library. Creativity is sacred, and it is not sacred. What we make matters enormously, and it doesn't matter at all. We toil alone, and we are accompanied by spirits. We are terrified, and we are brave. Art is a crushing chore and a wonderful privilege. And I just thought, that was perfect for the topic.
Exactly. And most things in life have that duality built into them. And the question is, which side do you lean towards and which side do you focus on?
Or can you navigate and go through both of them?
Right, right. So isn't it fascinating?
It's seeing the possibilities.
Right.
You know, instead of saying, oh my God, it's black or white, it's maybe it's purple.
Or it's black and it's white, right. And it's black and it's white, and it goes back and forth.
Right.
Or it's shades of gray. Which is.
The more I started to, I could never be in this lifetime a quantum physicist, but the more I kind of read about it, the more I think it allows for the, you know, it's like, yes, miracles happen. And it's all quantum physics.
Right. Well, miracles are just things that you can't explain yet.
Right. You know, who knows? Jesus might have been the ultimate quantum physicist.
Well, I don't know that he would have even considered that an explanation was necessary.
That's true. But I mean, in terms of because he could so tap into that piece of non-reality.
Multiple realities.
Multi-universes. Or is it, there's some quantum physicist who talks about membranes, and so they're abbreviated, they talk about brains.
Right.
It's B-R-A-N-E-S.
Right. Right. They're, when you really start listening to them,
It's clear sometimes they don't even know what the hell they're talking about.
Right, right. String theory is the one that I keep shaking my head at and going, okay, so you're talking about bits of energy that have shapes, so they have to be particles. Excuse me?
but they're like almost like the, you know what the Ouroboros is in mythology? The snake biting its own tail?
Right.
So it's almost like, so instead of a string that's straight out, it's biting its tail.
Yeah, we're going to have to go to break in a couple of minutes. But, you know, my thought about that is always vibration exists. Vibration exists in a location with a data set, with a frequency, however it's coded. And you don't need to have the string there to hold that. It's just there.
And then there's always the music of the spheres.
Right.
Which is probably real.
No doubt.
Thank you, Pythagoras.
So we're going to go to a break in a minute, but let's make sure that people know how to find you online. What's your website?
KatherineSamuelson.com, and it's KatherineSamuelson.
How clever. And they can find all the information about your services and everything else, right?
Oh, yes, on my redone website.
And you also have a book.
Yes.
Which
Opening
is,
the Heart, Meditations on How to Be, which is also on the website.
And it's really a beautiful book.
Thanks.
Both in terms of what it says, and it's a pretty book. It's really beautiful.
I got very lucky in my photographer.
Well, however it worked out, whatever the serendipity was, it's wonderful.
That's a story we could tell.
Well, we're going to go to the break. We will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. Here on Empower Radio, this is David Franklin Farkas. My guest is Catherine Samuelson, and we will be back. Don't go nowhere.
It's a place not so far away, a place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you, the enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head, like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home. But these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over a million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back. Catherine Samuelson, one of my favorite people to hang out with and knock ideas around. And we're talking about the idea that it might not be either or, it could be both. And that's
and
true.
How you managed to navigate that.
Right. Right. So you do life coaching, and how I'm assuming that this is one of the things that happens a lot in the coaching that you do. How do you use it to help people navigate situations?
Well, part of it is, as I talked about earlier, is helping them see possibilities. Sometimes it's just asking a question. I had a client some time ago, and she came and we met, and she was like, you know, and I really want to do this, and my friends and my family, they all tell me I can't. And I looked at her and said, why not? Thinking, you know, maybe she couldn't, but she was hearing everybody else's voices and not her own.
Right.
You know, and you know what she's doing right now? She's doing what
they said couldn't be done.
It may take a while to get there. So it's about seeing possibilities. Again, as I said earlier, sometimes it's seeing, okay, I want to pursue this new thing, but it's probably financially wise to stay where I am right now. And that will happen with the angels and guides. They'll say, don't quit your day job. It's providing you money. But in the meantime, we'd like you to consider explorer X, Y, and Z. You know? So just having that other thing to pursue can change your attitude. It can change how you feel about what you're maybe not feel so hopeless. Sometimes it's a matter of giving somebody homework.
Right.
I had a client who, for reasons, had had to move, and her stuff was still packed up in boxes 2 years later. And the assignment was, got to start going through your boxes. And she opened a box and realized that she really wanted to be where she used to live. And so that became what we worked on, getting her back to where she used to live, you know.
Right.
But also working on, okay, you're in this place and you're having these emotions. So let's figure out techniques for you to deal with your being where you really don't want to be.
Right. Now I'm laughing, having moved a little over a year ago. And every time I do, the old story that I was told many, many times is, if you want to grow spiritually, clean out your closets.
In other words, when you unclutter your surroundings, you unclutter your mind.
Well, but the closets, those dark spaces where you don't have to look at things, is where you keep whatever represents the stuff in you that you want to hide from yourself. So if you clean out your closets, it forces you to, at least symbolically, but more than that, to shift things within yourself.
Well, there, and it also is a thing of, if your space is cluttered, it can clog up the energy in your home.
Sure. But I have a theory about unpacking boxes as well. You move everything to a new place, and there are always a few boxes that you can't unpack. You open it up and you go brain dead. I don't know what to do with this. And you talk to yourself and you mumble. And
why the hell did I move this?
Well, no, you had to move it. The application of this is David's theory of emotional composting. The objects have an emotional charge. The objects have some aspect of your energy and your story that you haven't resolved yet. And you can't just take it and go, oh, I don't need it, and throw it away. And it doesn't really have a place where you live now. So when you look at it, you short out. Your brain shorts out and you can't deal with it. So you keep going back to the box. And at some point, most of the stuff in the box will lose its charge. And you'll go back to the box at some point and go, oh, I don't need this. And I don't need, oh, I can put this over here. And, you know, the boxes get emptied out really quickly. What I found amusing as I moved from one place to another is the places that the boxes wound up being, the corner or what corner of what room, was symbolic. You know, what was I keeping in the corner of my bedroom? You know? What was I keep? And as I went through the process of composting, checking it over and over again to see whether the charge was gone and whether there were either places for things or I didn't need them anymore, slowly but surely, they would both get emptied out, but also change location in the apartment. And the game became, okay, what's the symbolism here? Why did I put it over here? What's that energy about? But like, and you can use anything as an oracle to get information, and you can just as easily use where you keep your junk boxes to do that as anything else. You can apply feng shui principles to it. You can do all kinds of things, and it gets to be a lot of fun. But moving is a restructuring of all kinds of things, and often you're not ready to do certain things, and you have to be gentle with yourself and let that be okay.
Well, I'm more the type of, I unpack all the boxes, get rid of them, and stuff things places. And this kind of, it's interesting, there's an attic, and I have nothing in the attic. You know, but I've moved, like, 2004, in 2008. It was like downsize. Right. But then I'm still like, okay, like, oh, then I'll find something. It's like, why did I keep that? Somehow but despite having, you know, like the attic, and I actually have covered parking again, and there's a storage space in the covered parking, and that has very little in it, which I'm proud of. Like, I don't have enough to have stuff in that, you know. The storage in the condo itself is a little odd. It's like, oh, okay, that's what is that thing in, you know? Why did I keep that thing that I ended up having to put in the cabinet in the half bath?
Well, one of the things, I had a friend who gave me a very hard time about how many books I have when I moved. I'll get rid of all this stuff, and, you know, you're not reading them. I have other friends who, you know, just keep putting in bookshelves. They are never going to get rid of them. There's no such thing as too many books. There's just not enough bookshelves. And in thinking about it, we're a culture that doesn't create shrines and ritual spaces consciously most of the time, unless you do that kind of stuff as part of your spiritual work. So if you have a book about something that you want to learn, but you haven't read it yet, it holds the energy for that part of you that wants to learn that. And if it's something that you read and you loved and you would like to read again, it's holding that energy of how delightful that is. Right. And there are all these different energies that are being held by the books, and actually the pages of the book, because they're layer upon layer of organic material, actually store the energy. They become the battery. But we're creating a shrine to parts of ourselves by the books that we keep, whether we read them or not.
Oh, and then there's the books. And I've done this. Like, at some point, when I still lived in lovely Oak Park, Illinois, the home of Frank Lloyd Wright and Ernest Hemingway, I bought a book on symbology, and the leg broke off my bed frame weirdly, and I stuffed some books, including that, to hold the bed up. And at some point, then I had to go find it because I needed it.
And what was the symbolism that it was holding your bed up, right?
But, you know, it's a bed frame that had followed me since I was like 16 years old, you know, so it was like kind of old, and I don't know, it just like, really? But, you know, it's like, so sometimes you buy something or book or something, and it's like the quantum physics of it. The energy is telling you, you're going to need this in the future.
Right. You know, there's a similar thing that we do with pictures of relatives and loved ones. So, you know, when I was a kid in Brooklyn, every Italian household had either a sideboard table or a piano with lots and lots of framed pictures with little stands on them, so they stood up by themselves, of everybody's relatives alive or dead. And they didn't consider it a shrine, but it obviously was honoring all their loved ones and letting them look at them all the time. But if you go to certain Eastern cultures, there's a shrine to the ancestors.
And that could be your grandfather.
Right. You know, whatever that religion does to structure the idea of saving and honoring the energy of ancestors and what you put in that shrine and whose picture and how and all the rest of it, that's a structured way of doing it, but people do that all the time. You know, the picture of your family on somebody's desk in a corporate environment is a shrine to home and love in the middle of an environment where there really isn't much of that. I'm doing what I don't like here because I love that.
I have a piece of the other with me, and so it's both.
Right.
You know, it's like the pictures of the ancestors, they're gone, but they're not.
Right. And it's just another way of looking at it. Is it clutter? You know, in Yiddish, there's a word tchotchke, which means toy or little thing. Dust catcher.
Yep.
And
except the Yiddish I heard was tchotchke.
Yeah. Yeah. Slightly different part of Eastern Europe. And almost everybody I knew, including my mother, had some kind of tchotchke that they collected. And they had these big shelf units that had all the versions, and they were very happy. And look, I just got another one. And, you know, my mother did that with English bone china teacups.
I had a boyfriend whose mother collected cow pitchers.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things. Who knows what it was that started it, but people start these collections. And what is that aspect of personality and love that gets held in those? And what is the continuity that it gives? Or, you know, it's not one of the things I do. That's not the kind of stuff I collect. But everywhere I went when I was a kid, there were shelves and shelves and shelves of tchotchkes. So,
yeah, my mother at later in life started collecting paperweights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not the old expensive antique ones, but, and I couldn't figure, you know, at some point I was collecting little boxes and went, wait, I don't need these things.
Well, need can be defined in many different ways.
Yes, but I was like,
you know, if it's emotionally satisfying, then why not?
Yeah, it apparently didn't remain satisfying.
Right, right. But that ritual aspect, that ceremonial aspect of all kinds of things, is not conscious in a lot of what happens in certainly American culture.
Right. We as human beings have a need for ritual.
Mm-hmm.
But having become more secular, we somehow have created a way to have ritual. So we have both the secular and the ritual.
Well, professional sports. You know, we're coming up on the Super Bowl. People will wear the uniforms and colors of their team. They will do basically what they do at Thanksgiving, put out a lot of food, gather the family together. And then the ritual is this tribal warfare thing where, you know, from my perspective, you watch millionaires in spandex run around playing a child's game. But it's really important because it's my team. You know, I'll get hate mail.
And being a non-sports fan, it's like, how do you decide to emotionally attach to a particular team? And I don't care enough to figure it out.
Well, for me, I don't know. I never was all that interested in it. But I'm born and raised in Brooklyn. long enough ago that when the Brooklyn Dodgers moved to Los Angeles, it was a profound loss to everybody in that borough. Brooklyn still is the fourth largest city in the United States all by itself, and it's one borough in New York City. And that team and that stadium were in a neighborhood that people went to by trolley before people had individual cars. And there was a group of volunteer musicians who were there at every game and made wisecracks musically about what was going on the field. It was just, it was an event. It was unbelievable how important that team was to the entire identity of the borough of Brooklyn. And they couldn't get a new stadium built by the city fast enough to suit them economically, so they went to Los Angeles. And I was devastated. My father was devastated. I was devastated. It became clear it was not about the game. It was not about the fans. It was about the money. Okay, fine. but that's my thing about
but I have a sister professional who loves sports. Basketball, watches basketball. Mm-hmm. I have a sister who watches baseball and football, and I'm like, whatever.
Right. Everybody's got to do something, and that's what they do. So, but, you know, getting back to both end, it is both something that's very emotionally satisfying to the people that it's important to, and also totally artificial and contrived. But yes, very important to the people it's very important to. And they don't, they can't see outside of that. They can't understand anybody who's not jacked up with that.
Right. It's like, what? You're not a sports fan? No.
Right.
I'd rather watch a Shakespeare play or read a book or.
Right. You know, my line is, if I'm going to watch a professional, I want to watch a carpenter or a plumber because I'll learn something. An artist. You know, somebody that I can really enjoy, you know, and I enjoy the physical prowess of it. If I just watch it as, holy mackerel, look what that person just did. How can anyone do that? That's exciting. But
that's how occasionally I could, you know, when I still had a TV, I could watch, say, gymnastics.
Right. Right.
Because it's really, or even the athleticism of ballet.
Absolutely. Yeah, my daughter took dance lessons for almost 15 years. So I'm a dance dad. I watch dance a lot. And would be totally amazed. I'd watch these kids that I had watched grow up with it do things that obviously were impossible.
It's all quantum physics, you know.
You can't really do that.
But it's all quantum physics, so yes, they can.
Right, exactly. Basically, what I was saying was, I'd never be able to do that.
No,
even if I worked on it for 15 years, which I didn't start nearly early enough to do.
Well, and it also takes a certain body type, I think.
You don't think I have the body type for it?
Well, seeing I've only seen a headshot, I'm not sure I can tell.
Yeah, well.
I wasn't the tall, lithe person that could do ballet, you know? You know, my joints didn't quite, would never quite get in some of those positions.
Yep. Well, you have to start at age 4.
Well, you know, athleticism was not something that was high on the list in my family.
Right, right. I totally understand. So,
I mean, my dad played golf, but he started when he was in the Navy because he would take his aggressions out on the golf ball.
And it's where important conversations happen.
Well, he told us that he would pretend that the golf ball was his superior officer.
Well, You know, I think everybody in the military has something they do that is covert and subversive like that. My dad told a story in World War II when he was in the Army. He would salute and say, "Yes, sir." And "sir" in Hungarian is excrement.
Oh.
I come by this honestly, you know. I ran in the family.
Okay, deep breath so we can actually talk.
We're laughing way too much. Very unprofessional.
Because we have a good time.
That's right. And that was the whole point.
But sort of go back to the start of the story. So I would recommend that if you can go to pbs.org and find the program The Mind of Einstein, it's a really good like hour explanation of how his mind worked and how he came up with this. I think it was only an hour. And how it worked and this whole thing of still trying to figure out how the two actually work, but they don't work together.
Right.
So what's making them work together? You know, how come they actually exist at the same time?
Right. He was really frustrated. He didn't like quantum physics at all. And he really didn't like the idea of entanglement and what he called spooky action at a distance.
Right, because he said God doesn't play with chaos. Or
well, that was the other thing. The math behind it was probabilities, and he didn't like that idea at all. But I think he mellowed with it a bit as time went on. But the problem is it didn't fit together. It really didn't fit together, and it still
doesn't.
It still doesn't. If you look at things,
it may have something to do with the spooky dark matter and dark energy.
Right, right. And, you know, I specialize in spooky action at a distance. So...
So you're comfortable with the idea,
but really?
What people should know, if you don't know, if you know, even I don't know a great deal about physics, but what I do know is when they talk about dark matter and dark energy, it's not that it's bad and it's awful. It's just we can't see it yet.
There isn't any way to measure it. And that's the big thing in science is until you can measure something, you really can't say anything about it because it can't be quantified. And the whole metaphysical and spiritual realm is about things that can't be measured and quantified. So from the scientific point of view, it doesn't exist, or something. It exists, but we're not sure what it is.
We can't explain it, Lucy.
Exactly. So, my dear, this happens every time we get together. We're out of time.
All right.
We'll just have to do it again.
Sure.
Maybe over coffee.
All right.
But certainly on the show.
Okay. Yeah.
So tell everybody again where they can find you.
KatherineSamuelson.com, which is KatherineSamuelson.
And rattle off your list of services.
I do channeled angel readings. I am a certified life coach. And, of course, there's my book, which you can buy through the website or Amazon or Barnes & Noble online. And it's also not only paperback, it's Kindle, Nook, and iBook.
Fantastic.
And it's called Opening the Heart, Meditations on How to Be.
Fantastic. So I don't know whether everybody else who listened had as much fun as I did, but this was great fun. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for letting me be on the show.
Ah, a pleasure. My guest tonight has been Katherine Samuelson, and we will do this again. And meanwhile, if you got at all curious about who is this guy, David, and what does he do, you can go to househealing.com. And cleverly hiding in plain view under contact is all kinds of ways to get in touch with me, including a scheduling link that lets you make an appointment to have a 20-minute phone conversation with me absolutely free. And we can assess what's going on with a person, place, situation, whatever it might be, and see if my work might be helpful. If you want more about the show, that's at thefarkasfiles.com. We've been doing this for 5 years now, so there are hundreds and hundreds of interviews in the archive. And we're also on pretty much every streaming media outlet, including iTunes podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, all of those. So you can find us everywhere. And in the meantime, this is the yet another week and another wonderful hour. Thank you one and all for being with us. And this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.